Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, Eric Fawcett, GatorCountry.com, Basket Under Review. You know the sights, you know the sounds, you know the man is going to be joining us. We're going to talk Florida's 111-77 win over Arkansas last night in the Odom. Gators clinch at least a share of the SEC championship with the victory. Obviously, Florida would own the tiebreaker in the standings over Alabama, having beaten Alabama pretty senselessly in Gainesville as well. But the SEC doesn't have a tiebreaker format. So in that scenario, if Florida loses two games this week and Alabama wins two, Alabama is also the SEC champion. If Florida wins Tuesday night against Mississippi State, Florida wins the SEC title outright, regardless of what happens moving forward. Florida is the guaranteed to be the one seed in the SEC tournament. They cannot lose the one seed by virtue of their head-to-head win over Alabama. That's kind of the basic general background of where the, I guess, SEC title race, whatever you want to call it, you know, all that is. Florida has won the SEC championship. As you saw, they cut down nets. There was confetti. There were speeches. But technically, Alabama can still win the SEC championship, at least until Tuesday night. The way that SEC tiebreakers rule, Florida will be the one seed in Nashville by virtue of their head-to-head win over Alabama. I thought, as we welcome in Eric, I thought, given the stakes, given the opponent and the quality of the opponent, given sort of the atmosphere, it was the biggest home win for Florida in a very long time. I argued 2014, thought about that today. I still think that, like, I think 2017, they had a win over Kentucky, similar type of atmosphere and scenario, situation, game day in the house. But this game felt bigger. And also, Florida could win a championship on their home floor, and they did, putting up, you know, arguably their most impressive performance in the golden era, in the process.
Yeah, like the only thing that would hurt the case, I suppose, is just the fact that I'm just still not sure how good I think Arkansas is. I'm not sure how good I think the SEC is. But whatever the case may be, it's hard to look at the atmosphere that was in Gainesville, the fact that it was with College Game Day there, and not just like College Game Day was there, but it really felt to have the last game day before conference season or conference tournament start. It really did feel like kind of all eyes were on the Gators, all eyes on this game, and for it to just be a game with zero drama and just an absolute beatdown. It's hard not to say this one for me. Anything probably earlier than 2014, you are challenging my personal memory, or just like, you know, I don't claim to be an expert on stuff too much earlier than that. But it's just for a game to still matter so much to Arkansas. Yes, it was important to the Gators. They wanted to seal the SEC regular season title. But like, Arkansas could have really used a game like that to get up a seed, hopefully, for them. Or they would hope that a game like that would boost them up a seed. It mattered greatly to them. Obviously, if they win that game, suddenly the SEC race becomes very, very interesting. And it was just, you know, it looked like a bye game. Like, if you just saw the Gators win 111-77 and it's never close, and the garbage time started at the under four of the first half, you would say like, oh yeah, this was the Gators playing Bethune-Cookman, not Arkansas. Actually, Bethune-Cookman's pretty good this year. I think if Florida played Bethune-Cookman, I don't know if they would have beaten them as bad as they just beat Arkansas. So it's just pretty monumental. And I also lastly would like to say, and I have said this to a lot of people, to a lot of coaches in a lot of different leagues, like, if there's a tie at the top of a regular season title and one team through the tiebreakers has been decided to be the number one seed. Like that team is what, like, I'm not into this, like, sharing regular season title. And there's good friends of mine or teams that I work with that have claimed regular season titles by tying for first, but losing the tiebreak. Yeah. Get out of here. So, and I would have said that if the Gators are on the wrong side of that too. So I am glad that the Gators got down the nets, had a party. This wasn't like a, hey, well, you know, let's see how the tiebreakers shake out, especially given how it's still, you know, so unlikely, especially with the Gators about to play a Mississippi State team that's just putrid to the point of I'm not even sure how much we're going to talk about that game on this podcast. So yeah, just an all out beatdown. And I just certainly in my time ever watching the Gators, I can't remember just an absolute party like that. And it was, I'll also say while I continue to ramble on, this was like in these games that have 1 million stoppages and teams commit 1 billion fouls and there's a million reviews, oftentimes it can just completely take the energy out of a building, particularly in a blowout, because it's just like there's no tension, there's no suspense. And the crowd in Gainesville almost used the opportunity of these stoppages just to like get louder and fill in the space. And I just thought that was miraculous, because this is a game that everyone could have been just kind of waiting to be over, kind of just waiting for the party to start with the win. And it still was like as loud as possible when they're reviewing whatever with 9 minutes left in the second half when the game is all but decided. So really impressed with the crowd that was there as well to kind of still make it feel special in a game that was there's a chance that there was literally an hour and 20 minutes of garbage time in real time. And could have just been quiet, could have been just like, let's just like run out the clock, let the Gators win by a bunch. But the crowd really made it like feel special. Like for us that were watching the broadcast, you know, Neil, I know you're at most home games. I think you've probably been at every game that Dan Shulman has called, which is just a couple, but like Dan Shulman for ESPN, you know, I'm a Blue Jays fan, Toronto Blue Jays, watch a lot of Blue Jays baseball. Dan Shulman, we are very lucky to have him calling games in Sportsnet in Canada. So I hear him a lot through the summer calling Blue Jays games. And in everyone knows who's a baseball fan, and in baseball broadcasts, it's almost like two guys are like recording a podcast, especially in a blowout, because there's just like there's only so much game to talk about and you have to fill space. So I'm very used to like Dan Shulman in kind of like podcast host baseball mode, where he's just got to like fill space in a game that doesn't matter. And like I got flashbacks to that on Saturday, because there was just garbage time from 5 minutes left in the first half where like Shulman's got to like get as much time as possible out of like Hauk fishing stories. And he's just got to like, he just has to milk that for all he's worth. And I mean, Shulman did an incredible job, which is tough to do in some blowouts, but that was what this game turned into, was like Dan Shulman in baseball mode, having to just fill an hour of dead time because this game was just irrelevant for the second half. Yeah. Can't speak enough to the beatdown.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit. I thought, like, and you know, I miss a lot of the celebration because really most all of it. They were sort of setting things up and bringing ladders out and all of that. And, you know, the assistant SID came over and told us that, like, Cal would be up pretty soon. And so like he wasn't going to wait for the celebration in, like they got a charter flight to catch. And I was like, well, I want to talk to Cal. Like, you know, I want to hear what he has to say, because Cal won't Mick Cronin. Cal's not going to, like, he's going to talk to you anyway. He's not going to give you 1.5 minutes and like be pissed and leave. And I mean, he was great. And he kind of like, I thought he made two really fascinating points. You know, this isn't like the secret to basketball. None of this is going to be too shocking. But, you know, he complimented the scout, which Todd Golden did later. And he just said, like, Florida did kind of two things that really bothered Darius Acuff Jr., who had his worst game in college, at least from a field goal percentage and assist to turnover perspective. And he still, like, had 17 points and 6 assists and only committed 3 turnovers and, like, wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, but was frustrated by Florida's length and athleticism. And Cal said, first of all, like, it was the first time since the Houston game that someone really committed to denying him the ball once he got rid of the ball. And he said Florida just did a great job of, you know, fighting around screens and kind of chasing Acuff around and really making him work just to get the ball back. And then he said, you know, everybody tries to force Darius to his left. He said, it's another thing to be able to execute it. And he said, you know, Florida, and he again referenced Houston and said, like, other than Houston, and he said part of the Duke game, because Arkansas made a big rally in the Duke game and actually led that game late. He said nobody had really done that. So, I mean, it's kind of a testament to something that Eric has been talking about. I don't know. And you correct me if I'm wrong, Eric. I really think since November you've been kind of saying, like, this Florida team has a chance to be, like, really fantastic defensively and actually has been playing fantastic defensively. And, you know, I know Florida scored 111 points or whatever it was. But it was defense. Like, they got down 16-11, and then they just clamped down. I think Arkansas went 2 for their next 13. And, you know, it was 16-11 Arkansas, and then 5 minutes of game time later, it was 33-22, and Arkansas was dead. They were just done.
Well, and you can see, and this has been kind of something that has happened to Calipari even kind of throughout his career, even going back to some of his really good Kentucky teams, is when they are a team that is so transition reliant, things can really snowball quickly, because once they start allowing points, then they can't get out and run. And then if they can't get out and run, then they take bad shots or turn the ball over, and then the other team scores in transition. And, like, things can really snowball against a team that is so transition reliant. And that's what I feel kind of happened. And I also feel like when the ball was out of Darius Acuff's hands, I know he was getting the overrated chance all night, which I understand is the role of the student section. Like, I still think Acuff is really, really good. Dare I say properly rated. But you know who might be a little overrated is, well, I don't need to say they're overrated, but, like, I really do think that, like, Malik Thomas is a really good player, but he's kind of like a play finisher. And when it got to trying to create on his own, wasn't totally there. Really impressive game by Billy Richmond, who's been playing really good as of late. But, like, you know, outside of that, you know, the front court just not being able to handle Florida's physicality on either end. And I also just, I don't really remember the front court being used as offensive hubs, where I actually thought that would be a decent opportunity for Arkansas. But it just seemed like if it wasn't in Acuff's hands, it was getting out to DJ Wagner, who was, again, none of these guys were on their own terrible, but just, you know, DJ Wagner and Malik Thomas and just trying to create on their own is just not good enough to hang with a Florida team that was playing out of their minds, like, which is not, you can still be not bad and not up to that caliber. And I feel like that was the case. And we had a pregame Zoom for our Patreon subscribers, which is super fun. Whenever we do those, really good basketball discussion as always. And one of the things we talked about was just, like, yeah, just how reliant Arkansas is on Acuff. And I think I said that I thought he was going to end with 22 points, but on not great efficiency. I forget when he left the game. He certainly wasn't playing down the stretch. I mean, he still played, you know, 34 minutes, so it's not like he didn't play a ton. But yeah, you did see a bit of what you said. He still was 17-6 on not very good efficiency. So the Gators did a great job. But
yeah,
what's next after him offensively is just not good enough. And then the fact that Arkansas doesn't have the kind of bigs that Calipari has been known for, like, they don't have any of these NBA shot blocking, lob catching bigs. They don't have the Oscar Tshiebwe monster. Yeah, again, I think Brazil's a good player. I think Ewan's okay, but they're also just not, like, right away. And I joked that Florida would have, you know, not beaten Bethune-Cookman by more, maybe joking a little bit, but that's one thing when you look at right. Arkansas, like, outside of Acuff and Richmond, they don't look like a Calipari team. And that is not to say they're not, like, there's some talented players that are not those two, but Arkansas from the opening tip was just like, oh man, their front court is really small next to Florida's. They are not they're not super athletic. You know, you even mentioned on the pregame Zoom that Acuff's maybe not as tall as he's listed at, but, you know, he's still strong or whatever, but he also doesn't, you don't look at him and you're not like, wow, that guy is good because he is physically dominant, which has been the case for a lot of Calipari guards. So, yeah, that's maybe we're speaking a little bit more to what Arkansas is as a team, but whatever the case may be, I don't think they're as talented as what you'd expect. And they were just a horrible, like Florida is just an absolutely horrible matchup for them when everything goes through Acuff and Boogie Flan can be so good on the ball and Florida can just keep everything out in front of them with their length and Florida can just absolutely dominate them size wise in the front court. Like every category, everything that could go wrong for Arkansas, Florida is built to do. And something that I didn't really hear discussed at all is like, hey, there's still a chance these teams play each other again. There's a chance that Arkansas finishes second, the Gators are first, and maybe they're destined to be. I at this point, Neil, I don't even know who I think the next best team is in the SEC, but you know, the Gators could play Arkansas again. And if so, I just think that's an absolute nightmare for Arkansas. The Gators are just perfectly suited to just dominate them.
Yeah. I mean, and like, I agree. And, you know, Malik Thomas, like the way he gets going, really the way Arkansas gets going is that they make threes early. Like they make threes early. They don't have to make a ton the whole game. They're not Alabama, right? But they made 13. They shot 26 against Alabama. Okay. Alabama doesn't guard anybody. But they made, you know, 9, 7 of which came in the first half in their win over Vanderbilt. There's another game. Missouri. They made 8 of 18. They shot 14 in the first half, right? And I think that opens the floor for them. And that's how they space you and then you're toast because either you're chasing or you're closing out on shooters. And Florida was just like, we're going to run you off the line. And Malik Thomas, you're not getting him up. Like his two attempts came in the second half. He didn't make one. Well, he's shooting 40%, right? And like he has to have that to kind of thrive. And you know, again, like if Malik Thomas is taking twos on you, we're trying to finish over length. Like, I think you live with that, right? Billy Richmond was really good. He was a little less efficient in the second half when they stopped switching him really a little more and kind of stuck Tommy Houck on him more when Tommy was in the game. And I think that worked. But you know, he also drove past Houck on the first possession of the game. So, but it was a better matchup than when they switched, and Richmond is just really quick. But I think, you know, to Eric's point, like if you can get them out of their transition game, and Florida did that by not really turning over the ball in the first half at all, there you can guard them in the half court when you're as big and physical as Florida, because Acuff is big and strong, right? I mean, Dame Lillard is 6'1", 200, and you can see those comparisons. But I think, you know, Florida, they just never let either of those two freshman guards get going. And there's really not, like, Billy Richmond becoming a third option probably raises Arkansas's ceiling to like the Elite Eight, at least in my opinion, depending on their draw. Like, but if they play somebody like Iowa that doesn't turn the ball over, they're in trouble, Eric. Like, that was kind of one of my, like, larger external takeaways from this game is let's be very careful with Arkansas when we gut pick our bracket on Florida Basketball Hour, because there's going to be a matchup. If somebody doesn't turn it over and you can't get buckets, easy buckets on them, like, you're toast. And then the flip side is, like, Arkansas, I mean, they shoot 57.3% on twos. They shot 42% against Florida. Florida does that to everybody. That's part of why Florida's so good defensively. But I think, you know, the flip side is what would be the other ingredient for Arkansas being in a lot of trouble in March? It would be like a team that can just absolutely punish them for not defending drives well. Like in Florida, Xavier Lee could have scored 25, I felt like. Like he got into the paint whenever he wanted to. And honestly, like, I don't know. Like, and I'm not criticizing the staff too much when they went by 34, but I might have just been like, why aren't we driving more? Like, I thought there were some possessions where Florida settled a little bit, and they scored 111. So, you know, if somebody can get into the paint, they're 288th in 2-point defense, and there's a reason for that. It's just that Thomas and Acuff can't stay in front of people. Like, I just, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be, they're super matchup oriented. Whereas what I think is happening with Florida, over the last couple weeks with Irby Klavsar making 44% of his threes. I mean, he's up to 19 points per 40 minutes, according to CBB Analytics. Fawcett probably has his catch and shoot numbers. They're preposterous. Like Florida now, because they're making threes, you know, I think they needed to make a few more. I've always said 33 or 34%, but like there's an argument that this Florida team is a little more matchup proof than last year's was when the NCAA tournament starts. I haven't convinced myself of that yet, but I do think you could at least argue it just because Florida's going to beat people up on the glass and they're going to get extra possessions in March. So it was like, what do you do with those extra possessions? And like you needed more competent guard play, but it's hard to find like styles that are going to give Florida trouble. And yeah, so I'll throw that to Fawcett and lastly just say that, you know, man, I agree that there is not, I don't know who the second best team in the SEC is either, but we did a long film study on Arkansas, patreon.com/Florida basketball or Florida BB hour. Go to patreon.com/Florida BB hour and subscribe. You're going to get all this stuff, these film studies. And as we move into March, all that stuff is at the Patreon. It's not on the podcast. Like we just, I mean, he's at Basket Under Review, Slapping Glass, Gator Country. You know, I've got a ton. I am the like lead hoops writer at Saturday Down South. We have a lot of stuff going on, and it's just easier for us, first of all, on our own time to go to Patreon and put stuff up. And that film study was so illuminating because it was like, there's a lot of stuff Arkansas does really well, but there's also flaws with that team. And like it played out that way. Like and in many ways, Darius Acuff Jr. is underrated because they still don't run a lot of great stuff offensively. And he just, you know, because he's so tough and good at getting into the paint and he's such a great passer, they get shots, right? Anyway, that's kind of, those are my overarching thoughts. Go to Patreon and subscribe. No better time to do that now than now. You're muted.
Brutal. Yeah, I was looking at the Patreon page. Yeah, like the thing about the Patreon is, especially when it comes to that absolute sprint between Selection Sunday and the Thursday or Friday, whenever Florida will end up playing, it's just so busy for a number of reasons, which means like me and Neil will get together for some kind of preview, or well, a preview, not some kind of preview, but there's going to be just lots of times where when we have chances to do content, it'll be solo. So it also means there's going to be a lot of content because when Neil wants to do something that he's thinking about the game previewing, he'll do it. When I do, I'll do it. Neil filled out brackets. I filled out brackets, like, or a bracket. So like, you'll see our picks kind of independent of each other. So it's not just the Florida stuff. So, and of course this is, this is when we kick it into high gear. We know a lot of you, will subscribe all year long, which is amazing. I honestly think some of the off season content is the best. I know it's some people's reaction that it's like, oh, well, I'll subscribe once the season starts. But like, when it comes to the transfer portal, when it comes to the dog days of the offseason, when you don't have any other content and we're putting it out consistently, there's great value there. But this is obviously a great time to join, and that will be the first place even anything that comes onto this free podcast feed, it'll go to the Patreon first. So when you're just itching for stuff right away, then the Patreon's a great way to get it first. There will be great discussion in the comments on both the Gators, the matchup, and I'm sure everything else to do with the NCAA tournament. So really great time to join and ensure that we continue to do this type of content. Neil, when you were talking about, is Florida more like matchup proof? I think they absolutely are, because I think last year you look at the fact that the Gators had some turnover problems in the backcourt and you're like, okay, well, like who can turn these guys over? You looked at some teams that could possibly do it, and you did see in the NCAA tournament, there was some shaky moments with teams that could turn the Gators over in the backcourt. There was some situations where it's like, okay, like Florida doesn't like struggle to guard, but like they're really bad at guarding actions. They're really bad at guarding stuff off the ball. Some team that does that could really push them. UConn really pushed them. And then there was like, okay, well, like we know that when push comes to shove, it's Alex Connan at the five and Hauk at the four. So that's still really good, but this they are a little bit undersized. And some teams that have some more below the rim kind of bangers, they give the Gators the problem. Texas Tech probably beats the Gators 8 times out of 10 or whatever you want to say. So we saw even while the Gators were winning the championship last year, they had some clear deficiencies that they're not deficiencies, just, you know, no team is perfect to college basketball, but like, yeah, there's going to be some matchups that were tougher for them. There's also some matchups that were very good for them. Like we saw against Maryland, which I think Maryland was a good team. Gators handled them with ease. Where I look at this team and the fact that size, like opposing size, is obviously never going to be a problem. That's something that, like there's no team that who has a front court that's going to like scare the Gators. Yes, some could maybe play them tight. But like, you're not like concerned. Florida has the elite stopper at point guard that they didn't have last year when it was Walter Clayton. So, you know, Boogie Fland is kind of makes you less scared of those opposing guards all season long. He's handled those guys. Just kind of like generally speaking, I feel like this team is much better defensively. So there's not a lot of matchups there. The only thing that really could scare you is like with a Hauk at the three, sometimes there have been smaller guards that could give him problem. And for like 90 seconds, I guess we did see that with Arkansas, where they went right at him. Maybe you're a little concerned if with how Xavier Lee guards and his lack of physicality, but there's so few teams that actually try to pick on it and punish it. So, and the other thing too, is because the Gators aren't great in half court offense and just bludgeon people, like their offense all season long has kind of been like good defense agnostic. Like it doesn't matter if the other team is good or bad defensively, Florida just does their thing and gets offensive rebounds. And like that we've seen them play good defenses and they miss their shots and they get offensive rebounds and score. And if they play bad defenses, then they suddenly have a little bit more juice off the ball and they're able to make things happen. So we've kind of seen it all year long that it doesn't really matter how, like there's some teams that have really bad defenses that the Gators have not been able to really take advantage of and really score a ton. But at the same time, when they played good defenses, they still are relatively efficient. So it doesn't really matter the quality of the defense they're going against. And coercely, there's not a lot of offensive teams that are kind of built to give the Gators trouble. So I kind of do feel like, I'm not saying the Gators are unbeatable. We have seen they are beatable this regular season and still the lack of shooting could hurt them. But just, yeah, generally speaking, I don't see them having the same kind of matchup issues. I think there's still like, yeah, there's still questions of like, yeah, maybe they won't shoot the three well enough and that'll hurt them. Totally. That could absolutely happen, but it's not necessarily going to be like a matchup thing. There's certainly ways that the Gators, you know, could the Gators play so badly offensively that they can't stay in a game like against, I don't know, like Auburn, like sure that could happen, but like, look at what Auburn has been since that game. I don't think it was like Auburn was a bad matchup for the Gators. I think the Gators did not play well. So, still maybe ceiling questions. Like Florida doesn't have, Walter Clayton bailing them out like they had last year when they had bad matchups. So I don't feel like the upside is the same as last year necessarily. But I do feel as though there's not going to be any real matchup issues that would like scare you a ton, where even last year we all had UConn winning and the first game, like we all had the Florida versus UConn matchup in our brackets, or most of us did. And I think we even saw like, oh, that could be a challenging matchup for the Gators. There's just no way I see any of the 8-9 teams or whatever, even or 7-10 if the Gators are a 2 seed.
No,
like there's just none of those teams. I think, this could be a bad matchup. So I think just that point, even just right there, kind of illustrates the difference between last year and this year, and the fact that there's not these. And again, not saying the Gators can't lose to a 7 seed, but there's not. It's not like, oh, here's a matchup that is clearly challenging.
Yeah, I left David Barrett's comment up there talking about how, you know, can't guard fast small forwards. Maybe an overstatement on can't, but yeah, certainly struggles more with that. Like the emergence of Isaiah Brown has certainly helped. I mean, he was plus 21 in the first half yesterday. And he's another guy that, like, again, like Florida kind of drove the ball whenever they wanted to. And you know, once Brown hit a three, like just starts attacking closeouts. And Florida was Florida's four best drivers, you know, Xavier Lee, Tommy Houck, Fland, and Zay Brown were 19 of 24 from two yesterday. I mean, that's really good. I don't know what you do. Like, and again, like a lot of that is Arkansas's defensive deficiencies, but still, I mean, the Gators are kind of, they're just playing at such a higher level now. And a lot of it is like, well, they've made some shots. So defenses, you know, it's getting harder to just sag in the paint. And you know, hey, good for them. They're going to need all that, I think, in March, but the antidotes that were working much earlier in the season are certainly less effective now, which contributes to Florida being matchup proof. Maybe we'll do a Patreon on Isaiah Brown and kind of his emergence. I don't know. That might be something that you get at patreon.com in the next you know, couple weeks here. I did want to say that since it's March now, there is a bracket contest exclusively for March Madness. Over at my bookie, they're going to give out quite a bit of money through their bracket contest. $100,000 is what they're giving out. 100 grand, that's real cash. It's all up for grabs. They're also celebrating 100,000 followers on Instagram with another $10,000 in prizes. If you go over and follow them, head to mybookie.ag, use the promo code Neil500, and you'll get your first bet covered up to $500 courtesy of signing up because you listen to Florida Basketball. And if your bet misses, you just activate the bet back bonus and you can run it back without losing any money. March Madness only comes once a year. Go to mybookie.ag. Check those guys out. Certainly glad that they are sponsoring us as we head into the month of Izzo, the month of Walter Clayton Jr., whatever you want to call it. It is finally upon us. And I will say, like, award season is super fascinating to me in the SEC. Somebody asked me last night that I think Florida would sweep the awards. And I said, I don't know. I'm going to ask Eric on the podcast kind of where he is on some of these awards. And I should have checked how many starts Amari Allen has. Because I'll start there. Like, I think Irby Klavsar could win Sixth Man of the Year, but I also think that, like, the reality is if Amari Allen has less than nine, or if he has nine starts or less, he's going to win and should. But if he's over nine starts now, then, you know, he would not be eligible per SEC rules. And then it could go to Klavsar, who I think would make the most sense. SEC Player of the Year is tougher. I have been advocating maybe more than I even feel journalistically comfortable doing so for Thomas Houck winning the award. He is the highest rated player in offensive, the highest rated really candidate in defensive efficiency by a ton. And his defensive performance rating is 1.6 over LeBaron Filons. It's 2.1 over Darius Acuff Jr.'s at Evan Mia. If defense matters, then Houck should win going away. He's also one of four players in college basketball with a true shooting percentage of 60% or higher, averaging 20 points per 40 minutes or more in quad one games. So in big games, Tommy Houck actually plays at a higher level than LeBaron Filon and Darius Acuff Jr. Some of that, you could say, is because of his teammates. Anyway, I've made the case for Tommy Houck. I will say that, you know, I still think Acuff's going to win. I think the media is going to vote for him. I do not think that if Houck won, it would be wrong. I think that he is the more complete player right now. Doesn't mean I think he'll be a better pro either. But I do think how you guard should matter. And excuse me, I think that would be my take on that. I you know, don't have a real strong case, a real strong take on Coach of the Year other than it's starting to look like Todd Golden's just going to win because the other candidates for Coach of the Year have kind of fallen off. And like Sean Miller's early season wasn't good enough. And I do think maybe we should talk a little about the Texas game. But we don't have to. I mean, other than like it was impressive that Florida held, because I think they're really good offensively, and Florida just stopped them for 8 minutes and won the game. But there's my 2 cents staying on task on awards, Eric.
I was just looking at the history of the award. One of my, I don't know, deficiencies as a person, you can be the judge. I just don't really care about awards in a lot of ways. And people have probably heard me have maybe intuited that by listening to our show for a number of years. Now I'm just going to say it, but I enjoy some of the arguments at times. So, but I had to go back and look at who won player of the year, just because the question I had, I was going to ask you, and then I'm like, I should probably just check instead of trying to see off the top of your head, if you know, but just kind of historically in the league, has it been best player on best team, or has it been super productive guy, or whatever the case may be? So I do see that, it was Jahni Broome in 2020 or last season. It was Dalton Knecht the year prior, Brandon Miller the year prior. One thing that was really interesting is Herb Jones won in 2020, 2021, going back to your guarding should matter. Probably a good vote for, or, it's good to see Herbert Jones winning. So that was pretty big. It's always such a challenge to me. What Darius Acuff is doing is truly remarkable to me. Just because I don't feel like he's getting the best support, don't feel like he's getting the best actions ran for him, and still finding a way to put up massive productive numbers. I know it's also one thing I kind of do like, and I know this is again semantic, which is part of the reason I don't always love just awards, because so many leagues will say, there's going to be so many leagues that are most valuable player as opposed to most outstanding player or whatever the case may be, the semantic argument of what the MVP is. So I actually do really like that the SEC has, player of the year. It's not most valuable, because someone could certainly make an argument that Darius Acuff is most valuable to his team, because man, if he wasn't on Arkansas, but whatever the case may be, it's kind of interesting to see in some of the history that there's a little bit of a mix of best player on best team, but also not exclusively. So you can kind of take it a little bit of a way. I'm big Alabama. I respect a lot what they're doing. People know that. I still just don't see LeBaron Filon in the mix as much. I would say it's going to be Hauk or Acuff, even to see Vanderbilt kind of dropping off. Tyler Tanner is out of the picture. I do think there's a compelling argument for both. And it is just also a tough situation for Hauk, where to some extent, when your team is this deep, what was Hauk ever going to be able to do to separate him to be that absolute star in the kind of same way as an Acuff or a LeBaron Filon. And also I'll also say on the coach of the year thing, one area that I wish I really I delivered this take or before the season, but I don't think I was strong enough, and I really wish I delivered the take stronger. All these coaches sucked in the transfer portal. Every single SEC coach sucked. And I'd also even say, we can argue, I don't want to say Florida sucked. I still, it's actually kind of crazy that Florida still didn't do necessarily great in the portal and are still doing good. But there's a lot of teams that could just completely mismanaged it. So I think all these coaches deserve, many of these coaches deserve a slap on the wrist, because these rosters were all built horribly. Everyone did poorly in the portal. And a lot of these coaches, the styles of play are just ass in the league, in my opinion. I'm really disappointed in the SEC this year and a lot of the coaches. So, I don't care. I hope it's golden. I just look at what some of these other teams have done, and it's just utmost roster mismanagement. And I feel I did kind of mention it in the preseason. I was I don't think I would have built, I feel all of these teams didn't do very well in the portal, but I kind of said it like that. I, I, I really should have said it with my whole chest. I thought these coaches all did terrible in the portal. And now, so some of people who remember it will remember that I said it will like, no, it's not full revisionist history. I said it. I didn't believe it strong enough. But yeah, that's just like, I don't feel like any of these coaches. And the other thing too is, I still think it's very impressive. I know I talk about it all the time that Alabama is at all in the mix for the top of this league, given that their roster is just not that good. There's also no way in hell a lot of people would ever vote for Nate Oates, given the Betty Acko situation. And there will be some vengeful. So for that reason, I think it will be Golden. I just, you know, I just look down the rosters for a lot of these teams that wasted so much money on so many players that are not good enough, really poor work. So I'm going to say in addition to handing out Coach of the Year award, I think that the league should just give a grade to the league of coaching, and the SEC deserves a D minus for coaching this year on a whole, whatever the dean of coaches is for the SEC or whatever that fraternity is of coaches. They need to look in the mirror. And then I guess in terms of like sweeping awards, I forget, like, does the, because again, I just like, I to be honest, I just like don't care enough about awards. Is there a freshman of the year? Because I guess that would be one that that would keep the Gators from sweeping. Just not,
yeah, there not
is. I mean, yeah. So that would be I forget if the original one is like, oh, the Gators could sweep, or whoever mentioned the comment that the Gators could sweep awards. They don't really have a contender here for freshmen.
Yeah, these are great takes. I actually talked to Evan Miyakawa about like how I think the state of Mississippi, like, just deserves a complete F in college basketball for like the roster builds that Chris Jans and Chris Beard did. Like, the Chris's failed spectacularly. And like, I will say I was right about Ole Miss and called it, like, and I'm glad when we had our ballot this year, I think we had Ole Miss like 12th, and a lot of people were like, why'd you put them 12th? And I said, I have them 12th because Chris Beard's the coach. Like, I wanted to put them 15th. Like, I thought that roster made no sense. I thought Malik D is your best player and you did basically nothing to help him. Like AJ Store, a ball dominant guard who likes to play on the same side of the floor as Dia, was like, how does that help him? It just makes your spacing bad. And doesn't get the ball to Dia, who you should be playing through because he's such a great passer. Anyway, like, and then, you know, Miss State, who doesn't have nearly the NIL of Ole Miss, but you know, some of the players they got, like how is any of that complimentary to Josh Hubbard? And you know, it sucks that we'll have a March Madness without Josh Hubbard because that guy's awesome. He's so fun and great. Florida's going to play him Tuesday. Josh probably going to go for 30 and Florida's going to win by 30. You know, and that's how bad Miss State is. So, I mean, it's funny to me, like I think Florida did fine in the portal. Like, Xavier Lee has adjusted. He's playing within himself. Boogie Flan has been really good defensively for the most part all season. I thought the Texas game actually was kind of a weird one for him defensively. I didn't think he played particularly well in that game defensively, and actually kind of got beat off the bounce by guys that shouldn't beat him off the bounce, and had some weird plays where he got far away from Trayvon Mark and like that couldn't have been the scout. And you know, anyway, I didn't think he played particularly well in that game, but I thought he was good when he played last night on that end. Very good. I mean, you know, trying to think of who had a good Mike White had a good roster build. They had an idea of how they wanted to play. And they used their NIL on smart guys. Like, they probably spent a little over market value. I'm not speculating. Fawcett and I usually aren't speculating when we talk about what someone spends. They probably spent a little over market value on like Jeremiah Wilkinson, but it's been worth it. Like, he's been really good. Like, Smurf Millender, they got for about what market value is. Those are the two I know for sure. And he's been really good. You know, I don't know what they spent on Kanon Catchings. I guess probably more than Millender. And he's been pretty good, right? Like, they hit a lot, and they had an idea of how they wanted to play, which for a Mike White team, as everyone knows, that'd be good for them. Good for him for figuring out that he needed to do something different, because Georgia's pretty good. I think they're going to get to the second round. I don't know if they'll win in the second round. I think they're classic round of 32 Mike White team, though. And, you know, but yeah, just so many funky, bad roster builds. So Eric did, I can ascribe to this, when we were debating where to put people in our preseason poll, Vanderbilt's another team I thought had a nice roster build. Like, they just weren't big enough. But, you know, nonetheless, the point is, Eric was like, I don't know about their roster build. I don't know about their roster. And so this is something that I wish he had beat his chest about it more, because it looks really smart now. It really looks super smart now. Game Time Sidekicks is our other sponsor. We're not going to preview this state very much because we've gone like 45 minutes, and it's super fun to do that. I have a Game Time Sidekicks mug here. You know, you can see this one's a national champion one. I have a couple others that are smaller. But yeah, go to GameTimeSidekicks.com. If you spend $60, they give you a free koozie as well. They sponsor all our game previews. Florida can clinch an outright SEC championship at home against Miss State. I did want to talk a little bit. Okay, David says they get an A-plus on the portal. Yeah, I mean, retention is part of roster building. So, of course, you know, they deserve full credit for their roster retention. And I thought passing on Desmond Claude, as it turns out, I agree with that. Like, you know, that was smart. They got spooked by his parents, and Desmond Claude would not have helped this team. And, in fact, he would have made things much worse. And who knows if that personality would have made things worse too, because from all accounts, you know, that I've heard, Boogie Flynn has been a great teammate and has really just been somebody that actually people gravitate towards, as opposed to like, why isn't he hitting shots? Now they're saying, why isn't he hitting shots? But he's done everything that this staff has asked him to do. You know, so that's kind of the report on him. Yeah, let's close with the Kentucky rematch. I think it's no longer like desperation station for Kentucky, because they beat Vanderbilt yesterday and really waxed them pretty good. But I will say that, like, if Kentucky wants to not be on the 8-9 line, they might want to beat Florida and Rupp. And like, how motivated are the Gators in that game? Does Florida have to win that game to get a 1 seed? You know, it's an intriguing one, and it's Denzel Aberdeen senior day.
Yeah, I think it will be big for Kentucky, both for the reason you kind of like first mentioned, when just like the fact that right now Kentucky is somewhere on that 7-8 line with like in the NCAA tournament, but you even look for their ability to go win a or to make a little bit of a run in the SEC tournament. Like, they are right in the absolute blender of the SEC, because behind the Gators, who have somewhat ran away with the top to maybe win the league by multiple games, like Arkansas third right now at 11-5, and Texas A&M 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th at 9-7. Like, and Kentucky's right in there in 10-6. Like, right now, like, you know, like third is in play for Kentucky, but also like ninth. Like, that game is almost certainly going to have pretty big implications for Kentucky in the SEC standings. So yeah, it's going to matter a lot to them. And yeah, I expect the very, very motivated Kentucky team, one that has been not particularly consistent, not even just from a kind of win-loss standpoint. I actually feel like they're like their win-loss inconsistency is like almost a little bit overrated. Like, still their worst loss is to Auburn at 40. And yes, Auburn hasn't been playing great in the midst of that, but like, it's not right. It's not like Kentucky has dropped a terrible one, even going back to when everyone thought that they were awful in non-conference play for losing to like Gonzaga, Louisville, Michigan State. However, just their inconsistency within games has been very notable. And we saw that when Kentucky played the Gators, where they were really bad to start and they kind of brought their way back. And that's been a lot of the situations. Even when Kentucky's won, they dig themselves a hole. They climb back out of it, but yeah, their inconsistency there has been huge. And that has been ultimately what has costed them. Just overall, I think Kentucky is going to be, it's going to be a huge one for Kentucky. It's so hard to say what's like must win for the Gators to get a 1 seed or whatever, because, and this is one of the problems I kind of have with general bracket talk And it is also kind of hard to do for someone in our situation coming from a Florida angle as we speak, is so much of like comments on our stuff on the Patreon or when we're talking or people responding will be like, oh, well, like, you know, the Gators win this, and they are, they're going to be a this seed. And it's like, maybe, but things don't happen in a vacuum. So it's kind of impossible to say, like, there is a chance that Florida loses this game and it would be like the difference between them being a, getting a one seed or not, because they go and win the rest of the way and other teams in the Big 12 are losing. But there's also a chance that it ultimately doesn't mean anything. So it is really difficult to say right now what is must win. But you think about a road game with Kentucky, and then you think about what the Gators will be dealing with in the SEC tournament as the presumed one seed. They're probably not going to play a high value game until the semifinals. And the finals. And even then, that neutral site game in the semis could be with a team that's like in the 25-ish range in KenPom, which again is still a valuable game, but it's not the kind of marquee stuff that these Big 10 and Big 12 teams will be getting, and the ones that Florida's trying to catch. So it's hard to just describe, oh, this is must win to be a one seed. Oh, this is doesn't matter, there'll be a two seed. It's so difficult to say. But if I like had to say, I still, the way I look at it, feel like the Gators will need things to kind of break their way to be a one seed. So if I had to say, sure, whatever, yes, this is a must win if the Gators want to be a one seed. I don't feel strongly about that take, but I don't want to, you know, don't love to be in the mushy middle with takes on this podcast. I will, if I had to say, then sure, yes, must win for the Gators if they want to be a one seed. And even then, who knows?
Yeah, I think those are, I think that's pretty right. I think Florida, I don't think that their path to the one seed, like, I think it would do them better to win at Rupp than like to win a high value game, a quote unquote high value game in the SEC tournament semifinal, which right now, by the way, would be like the winner of Vanderbilt, Texas A&M. Now there's still two games to play, so the seeding can like come up, but beating Vanderbilt on a semi OA floor, in the quarterfinal, I don't know, like maybe that helps a little bit because Vanderbilt's predictives are so good still. But like, I don't know if right now there's a scenario where Kentucky plays Missouri in the quarterfinal and then Florida would get a rematch with Missouri in the SEC semifinal or have to play Kentucky a third time in the SEC semifinal. And I don't know if that helps Florida because I honestly am not convinced that the committee watches Power Five tournament games that occur on Saturday or Sunday anymore. Like, I'm just not convinced of that anymore. And I think, you know, so that's kind of why I think this week, like, winning at Rupp may do more for Florida's one seed chances. Now, look, if Florida loses the SEC quarterfinal, maybe they lose a one seed as a result of that. And maybe that game matters more than an SEC semifinal does. But that's kind of my take on it. I posted resume metrics today. I actually was wrong on wins above bubble. I used the Torvik WAB number. Which is 6, and the NCAA WAB number apparently is different for some reason.
I'm going to say not your fault when this morning I saw multiple high-profile national media types using the wrong WAB. So
thank you.
You were not, I will say, like, you one are not the only one, and two, there's a good chance you saw pretty much all of college basketball media using the wrong one. So that is I'm glad you noted the correction, but yeah, it was not a foolish one for you. I think you have been led astray by the national media types who we have been, I'm always happy to talk about their bracketology hits and misses.
Yeah. I mean, I think Rocco Miller's the best one. And I guess if I had listened to his entire field of 68, recent bracketology with Lucas, who were actually, I think they're the best two. They probably would have explained to me that the NCAA WAB is different than the Torvik WAB, and I looked at the Torvik WAB, so that was the mistake I made. But Florida's wins above bubble, by the way, went from like 13-6 in Torvik this week because they won at Texas and they beat Arkansas. So like Florida, and because Georgia keeps winning and is now like, at least for now, a quad one win for Florida in the home game and the road game. So like having two quad ones over Georgia actually meant that Florida went from, like, you saw the post last night that were like Florida grabs its 10th quad one win. And then the new net came out today and Florida got another quad one win because Georgia was up to 30th in the net. It's all very, very weird.
Just jump in before you.
No, please go ahead.
I know we're probably guilty of just like soldiering on while giving terms. Wins above bubble, which is like kind of like wins above replacement in baseball or other sports. But it is like, it is a stat that I feel like is only getting increasingly used by the committee. They talk about it more and more openly. And most bracketologists, including Rocco, including Luke, I don't know what Rocco thinks. I know Lucas is if you had to pick a single metric that the tournament would be seeded by, most bracketologists would say that WAB is the one. Whether or not, like, obviously I don't think anyone ever wants a purely metric driven one, but I would also say if you were to look at past years and the bubble, and say like which teams, just to whatever your eye, who deserves to be in and who deserves to be out, I like the WAB matches common sense the most. So anyways, that's the metric that Neil is referencing, and I think it's a smart one to reference, because I do think the committee appears to weigh it a lot more heavily than people realize, and they probably weigh the predictives like KenPom, like Torvik, which we all reference a lot. I think that it probably referenced a little bit too much, and WAB, like Neil is referencing, is a good one to look at.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. That actually is super helpful, I'm sure, for our listeners. And just to add one more piece of context to that, like the last four in the last 2 years, like, has correlated directly to WAB. Directly. So like when the committee was pressed on like North Carolina last year, they're like, well, wins above bubble. And, you know, that's how they explained away a team with one quadrant one win getting into the field. Hey, Ohio State, I'm watching you. I know your WAB is higher than Texas A&M right now. Yeah. I'm just pointing that out, because Texas A&M hosts Kentucky this week on what presumably, barring a Brazos County judge ruling differently, will be Rashawn Agee's last home game in College Station. And, you know, Kentucky going on the road and facing a desperate team has not been a great scenario for Kentucky all year. But Kentucky, to Eric's point, like, they kind of don't have bad losses, and like their metrics are finally improving. So like, I don't know. I kind of expect them to take it to A&M a little bit on their home floor. But if A&M loses that game, they go to 19-11 and their WAB is behind some super desperate bubble teams. Like, could the SEC slip from 11 teams in presumably this week to 9? I think that's very possible. I think that's very possible, because I think A&M is, they're teetering on the edge of dead. And, you know, Auburn, they're going to have to win out this week. They've got to beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa, or they're done. So now if they beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa, the committee is going to probably put a 17-14 team in the field and not feel bad about it, because they'll have a win at Florida, a win at Alabama, a win over St. John's, a blowout win over NC State. Like, at that point, you know. Anyway, Auburn's going to be a crazy mystery, and it's all because Bruce Pearl retired like weeks before the season started, and so like they were locked in on this schedule of death that Bruce Pearl had, which no first year coach would ever agree to anyway. Again, all these things are for another day, but the Gators wax Arkansas 111-77, clinch a share of the SEC championship. He's Eric Fawcett. I'm Neil Blackman. Go Gators. Keep attacking closeouts. Thank you.